case of the day, Boyka against Holder.
My name is Alexander Siegel. I represent appellants here, Boyka and Dritz. This case comes from the asylum application made by an alien by a person who basically was a refugee.
The microphone up a little closer to you.
This case comes from an asylum. Thank
you.
This case comes from an asylum application made by a refugee running from the country with notorious human rights violations, specifically Belarus. Every report of this century issued by the Department of State, numerous corroborative evidence from just about every human rights organization supports that Belarus first, it's an authoritarian state. Second, it prosecutes dissent. Third, most of the dissent is students. And fourth, people who actually try to exhibit any form of dissent end up in jail or being expelled from the universities, exactly the complaints made by the appellants. The case was filed with the government, eventually referred to the immigration judge, and the immigration judge had hearings in March of 2006. At that hearing, the judge was supposed to look at the case, and there are certain very specific rules established by the Immigration Nationality Act, the 8 CFR regulations, and jurisdictional cases of this court that the judge had to adhere. And our position is that the judge just failed to adhere to the basic principles specifically established by this court. For example, the judge denied this case for a number of reasons. Reason number one, the judge found that the lead petitioner Boyka wasn't credible. And our position is the credibility findings were not warranted by substantial evidence. Second, the judge totally disregarded voluminous corroborative evidence, unrebutted corroborative evidence produced by the appellants, by the respondents in an immigration case. Totally disregarded them. She requested one piece of corroborative evidence, which was not attainable, and then rejected the explanation by the respondents that the documents was not attainable.
He gave the judge though gave the applicant a recess or time to get this evidence.
Yes, the immigration law specifically states that it's after the Real ID Act changes that when the potential testimony is credible, not credible, and the judge decides that she wants corroborative evidence, only after that decision, and it's supported by the case law of this court, only after that decision then the burden is of the respondent to produce corroborative evidence or explain why evidence are not attainable. The judge specifically says in the first, there was two individual hearings. In the first individual hearing, the judge says, I believe that because there is an issue of what school you attended, I want school records to be produced from a school you attended in order to corroborate your claim that you attended this school, not that school, and the difference was between a four-hour cities to universities linguistic department, same linguistic department to different universities. The respondent said, I attended a university in Minsk. Some records produced by the government, which the government insists are very decisive, and which we insist are not, say that she attended the Brest University. When she comes back at the next second hearing, she explains to the judge, my parents attended the university. Now, that university is the one that expelled her. And now the judge expects that the university is going to write her a letter or produce some document showing that she was expelled, she was attending and then we expelled her. Okay? Now she comes back and she says the university outright rejects without explanation to my parents to produce any records that I attended that university. Then the judge says, you know what? You could have produced a letter from your colleagues from the university. You could have produced a letter from your professor from the university. This is not the evidence that the judge said was important and required corroborative evidence. The judge specifically at the first hearing said, I want school records. She couldn't produce them and explain why they were not attendable. If the judge decided that she wanted a professor letter or a letter from the students, she should have given her another recess and say, now I decide And this is exactly the case for NDA in the, of this court. The judge first has to make a decision that she needs this evidence, then she needs to give her an opportunity to produce the evidence or explain why the evidence is not attainable. Our position is, if you want something more than you originally requested, then you have to give her an opportunity to produce this evidence. It wasn't done. Then the judge goes ahead and takes administrative notice of a very interesting report issued by the governmental office, accounting office, which is notoriously is not an office that deals with issues of human rights. This is the arm of the Congress which deals with the investigations of potential abuses within the American government, not Belarusian government. Now, the report is filled with hearsay and various conjectures, which absolutely contradicted, again, by every country condition report of the Department of State issued in this century.
Mr. Siegel, I understood the immigration judge to have relied on that GAO report principally for one point, which was that a student admitted under the J-1 visa program is required to be a student in good standing. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And I guess the way I understood the immigration judge to be reasoning is if Ms. Boyka got two J-1 visas to come to the United States on those two visits, she had to have shown to get that visa that she was a student in good standing. Presumably there should be some records available somewhere to the effect that she was actually a student at Minsk.
Okay.
Why isn't that a reasonable way of looking at the case?
Because when you go in Belarus, which is exceptionally oppressive to American government, to the extent that the American embassy just ran away, and they have to go to Russia, or they have to go now to Poland to get visas on the J-1 program. And where the policy of this country is that we are welcoming Belarusian students because of this, because of the abuses. The system is you don't go to an embassy. You can't even go into an American embassy. You have to call, make an appointment and all that. You go to an agency which is called Work and Travel Agency. It's not a travel agency, as the judge calls it. It's a work and travel agency. It's an agency that deals with one thing. They help people, students, to fill out application. I go to that agency. I fill out an application. Okay. Basically, I answer questions by the clerk. Okay. The clerk answers the information. I live in Brest. My parents live in Brest. Okay. I study in Minsk. Obviously, I give my Brest address. I don't give my dormitory address. I give my parents' address. Otherwise, I can lose the mail. Why is this explanation is not reasonable? I give all this information, and then because my address is in Brest, the clerk makes an error and enters Brest University. Then this application goes to the embassy, and the embassy looks into the application at the interview. Now, the judge is suggesting, I don't know where she's getting it from. There is nothing in the record that supports the suggestion that she was actually asked specifically as to what university she attended. There is nothing in the record. If you carefully review the record, there is nothing in the record that suggests this. What is in the record, that she had some kind of a conversation, and most of it she was asked what year you attend. Okay? So why is it not plausible that the information, the tiny little scribble note in second application by the consulate was not just taken from the application. This is not a fact, which judge accepts as a fact, that embassy does thorough interviews of, usually the interview takes 1 minute, less than 1 minute. Simple couple of questions, are you a student or no, and so on and so forth. Government presented no record whatsoever that supports the claim, except for some hearsay conversations and just scribble note by the consular officer. And officer did not testify. Nobody testified from the embassy. We don't know what the process was employed. The officer wasn't produced. The embassy official wasn't produced to testify. Nothing whatsoever to support the argument that the judges make. Actually, it's an argument. It's a conjecture. It's not even a finding of fact. That she was a liar. And she deliberately fabricated that she attended this university and not that university, which she doesn't have any motive to do whatsoever. What difference does it make whether she attends Brest University or Minsk University if she is saying I was politically active and everything in the in the record supports the fact that she actually entitled to asylum?
Okay. You want to reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal?
I also wanted to bring to your attention the administrative, the way in which the administrative notice was taken. Okay, this document should have never been taken administratively into the record, because the administrative notice under the current law as it stands, okay? By the way, the whole idea of administrative notice comes through the regulations and then interpreted by this court. It only applies to specific documents where facts are not contradicted whatsoever. Now, this document presents...
Thank you, Mr. Siegel. Mm-hmm. So, for the defense respondent, Ms. DeAngelis.
Good morning. May it please the court, Kate DeAngelis for the Attorney General. The court should deny the instant petition for review. The agency's adverse credibility decision was proper. It was well supported by the record, and a reasonable fact finder would not be compelled to reach a different conclusion here. While this case is governed by the Real ID Act amendments to the INA, the agency decision withstands review under any iteration of the statute. Petitioner's testimony was at odds with her documentary evidence regarding what we've already been discussing, which university she attended, but that was not the only inconsistency that was noted by the board in its decision. The board noted two other inconsistencies which independently could serve a basis for the agency's decision here. Petitioner testified inconsistently about her knowledge of where her friend Fomina was located when there was a letter in the record from this woman from Brest that she must have requested for documentation. We've also not talked about the fact that petitioner testified at an early hearing that she herself filled out her visa applications. Then she came back later and said that no, in fact, she had not actually filled out the applications, that a travel agent at a tourist agency had filled out the applications. Under the Real ID Act, each of these independently and taken together amply support the agency's adverse credibility decision in this case. I'll pause if the court doesn't have any questions. I'll leave my...
Was the immigration judge wrong about the testimony about who paid for the tuition?
It does appear that that was a misreading or a misunderstanding of the testimony. When we reviewed the record, we noted that. I believe we noted it in our brief. But I would state that the court should be reviewing the board's decision in this case. And the board did not rely upon the immigration judge's findings with regard to who paid the tuition. Okay, so to sum up, because the record evidence does not compel reversal here, the court should affirm the decision below and should deny the petition.
Was there also an issue, if I'm remembering correctly, about the Polish visa versus the testimony about having come through Paris? Am I misremembering?
I'm not sure. I do know that she was asked how she traveled to the United States the second time, that she did say that she came through Paris, and they asked if she had filed for any sort of relief in France, and she said no. But I'm not aware of anything that the agency relied on regarding a Polish visa. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. DeAngelis. Mr. Siegel, your time expired, but if you want 1 minute for final rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. The two inconsistencies, Fomina. She never said that she had not been in touch with Fomina. The judge totally mischaracterized the testimony. The record shows she was asked whether or not she knows what happened to Fomina right after she was released from jail, and the answer was no. Then she was asked whether she knew what happened with Fomina right now, and the answer was no. The letter of Fomina is corroborative evidence. It's not contradicted. The judge totally mischaracterized this. That's first. Secondly, she traveled through France to Poland and then through Poland to the United States. There's no contradiction there. And the third, and it goes from one to another to third to fourth. It goes to every finding of the judge. If you read through the record, I pointed out in my brief, if you read through the record just about every finding, it's just mixed characterization of the record. If you read the record, it's not what she is saying at all. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.